Hello and welcome to the Americano podcast, a series of discussions about American politics, power, and prejudices. It is 2025 and Donald Trump is president once again of the United States. We will, of course, be following the moves of the Donald and his second administration very closely. However, it won't just be politics for us this year. We'll also talk a lot and cover American culture, life, and the arts. I should also remind you, because my producer Natasha will not let me hear the end of it, that we are on Spectator TV. So head to our YouTube channel to watch that. Hello and welcome to the Americano podcast. Habemus trade deal. Donald Trump and Keir Starmer, the British Prime Minister, have just gotten off the phone for a sort of typically ridiculous but quite extraordinary press conference where they announced a big, shiny, beautiful new trade deal between Britain and the United States. To discuss this very important and pressing subject, I'm delighted to be joined by Sarah Elliott of the Prosperity Institute, who looks after a special US-UK trade division within that, and our very own Kate Andrews, who is Deputy US Editor of The Spectator. I'll start with you, Sarah. Presumably this is the sort of thing you've been campaigning for, and we have to acknowledge that it is a step in the right direction, even if a lot of things remain unclear.
Correct. I mean, let's focus on the positives here. One, the UK is the first official deal to be negotiated since Liberation Day, April 2nd. It's been done on the 80th anniversary of Victory in Europe Day, which is a great symbolic day of where the Atlantic relationship defeated fascism. And that began the special relationship, which, of course, ended with the Cold War, them fighting that. And then it's also right before the Treasury Secretary goes to Switzerland to negotiate with Xi, who's the ultimate villain in this trade war, and is the whole purpose for the chaos that has ensued since Liberation Day. So I think it shows a very good united transatlantic front, and it is the beginning. The president made it sound like it was more comprehensive, that this was a maxed out deal, but clearly it's just dealing with aluminium and steel tariffs and cars and the key industries that export to the U.S. But it also deals with now American agriculture and American beef in particular. And I thought it was really fascinating to have the agricultural secretary there, Brooke Rollins. So that is an area, of course, of which the Brits have not wanted to talk about or go near. And then the other positive is that this is before the EU reset meeting on the 19th of May, setting the stage for those discussions, which the United States was fearful they would end up in the EU regulatory orbit, which would prevent further trade on pharmaceuticals, medicine, tech, and AI.
Mm. I thought on agriculture, I thought it was particularly interesting that Trump said when the inevitable chlorinated chicken question or beef standards question came up, that Trump said that we have Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and that maybe America would be changing its food standards in a way that might comply better with ours, which is a very interesting development and would put to bed one of the most boring and ongoing parts of every UK-US trade story that you've ever read. Kate, let me be a little bit cynical for a moment. Howard Lutnick is already getting a lot of attention from people who are willing to doubt the greatness of this deal. He said, we came in at 10% and we finished at 10%. And it's a fair enough point. I think Chris Mason from the BBC asked this point. He said, you know, 6 months ago, this still would have been pretty bad news for Britain, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would have been. And this is a real mixed bag of, frankly, compromises, actually, that both sides had to make to make the picture a little bit rosier. That's not to say that it's bad news overall. I actually think if you step back, I completely agree with Sarah. This is a very good news story. It's a good news story for the US, which is seeing markets rally based on this news. It suggests that the president is not going to be completely hardline about what was announced on Liberation Day. It sounds like free trade is back on the agenda. And my gosh, if you break down what the president himself was saying, this was like an economics 101 class in the benefits of free trade. When he was talking about agriculture, and this really stood out to me too, Freddie, when he was asked about chicken and beef, he said, they'll take what they want. That's a big compromise on the US side. But then he said, people are going to have options, choice, I'm quoting here, and they'll have more of it. And that usually means lower prices. I mean, by George, I think he's got it. This is exactly why free trade, particularly with your allies, but frankly with neutral countries as well, is a great thing. So we've seen a massive shift from the rhetoric of maybe your daughter's going to have two dolls at Christmas, maybe you're going to have five pencils instead of 20. This is back on track with what made America rich and prosperous to begin with, which was, you know, this real emphasis on trade. But I do think what's going to come out is the extent to which trade barriers, while some have been reduced today, others have really gone up, and that 10% tariff remains in place. And I think this matters a lot for other countries coming to the negotiating table, because this first, certainly historic moment indicates that Trump has now created a baseline of 10%, which is just so far above what anybody could have possibly imagined. Frankly, even during the campaign with Donald Trump, he was talking about pretty aggressive tariffs on North America, and he was talking about pretty aggressive tariffs on China. But the idea that the UK and Europe would get this blanket 10% tariff was never discussed. So I think that the impact of that is still yet to be seen. That's not going to show up in the figures for a long time. And despite securing this free trade deal, Americans and Brits could still see the poor, you know, the really challenging economic reality of these taxes, right? Tariffs are taxes, they're levies. And you could still see a reduction in major areas when it comes to what's being imported and exported. So it is a good news story. But Freddie, I think you're completely right to flag that the idea that it's just all been undone is not the case. We still have that 10% tariff in place.
And Sarah, someone who was standing next to the Resolute desk was Peter Mandelson, Lord Mandelson, who is, of course, now the British ambassador in Washington. And he gave a rather sort of complimentary speech about Donald Trump, saying, you know, you were true to your word, you got it done, and all this sort of stuff. I think there was a lot of palaver about Mandelson's appointment. I think a lot of the kind of British right were very suspicious of it, because Mandelson's a big Remainer, ties to China and so on. And yet I think it seems clear that he is sufficiently unideological to make deals where they suit the British interest, is he not?
Yes, I mean, he's transactional. I actually think from Keir Starmer's point of view, he's a genius appointment in a way. He's a great political operator. He's been on both sides of the table. He's been an EU trade commissioner. He's operated at the highest levels of government. But he kind of has this kind of slimy persona, I guess you could say, in a way, kind of a slick deal maker. So maybe he's like the perfect guy for Washington, right? And he's transactional, as is Donald Trump. Donald Trump will do business with anyone. So I think it's actually proved out to be a good pairing so far. He's very good in the media as well. And he's been on a lot of U.S. media, being able to tout all sorts of lines to help with the special relationship and to get this deal across the board. It will be interesting to see the pushback that Keir Starmer gets from the agricultural community in the U.K., and more heat on the farmers and things like that, bringing American products in or competition. But, you know, even though we talk about that this is a great step forward for free trade because we're talking about lowering tariff barriers and tariffs, it's still seen as a revenue raiser for Trump. He still thinks he's going to get like $6 billion out of these tariffs. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know, he still kind of hangs on to that idea that he wants these tariffs to help with the External Revenue Service now in the United States. And I don't think it really takes into effect the behavior that people will do in response to these tariffs.
Yeah, I mean, he's essentially, Kate, he has bullied the UK towards a more accommodating position towards the US?
I think in some areas he has, and also just from immediate glance, because the details of this are still coming out, I think in some areas the UK has negotiated pretty well. For example, everybody assumed overnight that the digital services tax was going to be up for debate because it disproportionately affects big American companies like Amazon. And early indication, what's being reported is that that isn't going to be part of this. That's actually quite surprising from the American negotiating perspective. That would have been a very obvious thing to go after. Perhaps it was a red line for this government, particularly Labour government, that they didn't want to be seen as being easy when it comes to tax on big tech firms. And also, again, I brought up chicken before. The fact that that's not being pushed on the UK is a pretty big win for the UK, because it was always assumed that there was going to be no FTA whatsoever unless the UK and Europe compromised on chicken specifically. As you say, Freddie, it's been an infuriating conversation for years, but it has been the crux of it. And they've just decided to go, nope, don't worry about it. Let's skip over that one for now. It speaks to Sarah's point that, you know, this is not the most comprehensive free trade deal. Trump said that it was a maxed out deal, but then he said, and we're going to build on top of it. So he acknowledges that it's not maxed out. There's a lot more to happen here. But you know, there are wins, and Lutnick was very clear about them. The ethanol, the beef, the machinery, generally speaking, agriculture is going to be more easily accessible for Brits to buy from America now, and also the fast tracking. There was one thing that really stuck out. I don't think I have the direct quote in front of me, but it was when Lutnick was talking about how the UK managed to do this. And he said they looked at what they're importing from other countries, and they decided to put the US at the front of that line or queue. And the idea being, look, if you're going to import from somewhere, you should be importing from America. That's really interesting for other countries to hear as well, and for all of us to hear, because if the tactic is we don't actually expect the world to shut down and siphon itself off, and we don't expect globalization to go out the window, we just want you to put America first, dare I say. That's like a very clear indicator for other countries when they're coming to the table. Perhaps, you know, what other countries are we getting this food from or that from, that product from, that America could also do? That's one I would definitely watch as we get more whisperings of other kinds of free trade deals. What is it that they could be taking from America? And then, of course, if they want to, I mean, we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but we can just say it bluntly. Trump has gone so extreme, and the tariffs on Liberation Day or Worldwide Tariff Day were so bold and so painful. There are a lot of people out there who are still quite upset about that. And, you know, Keir Starmer has played a blinder on this one. He was smart not to get angry. He was smart not to start speaking to the press about how furious he was, and he's managed to secure the first trade deal. But there are going to be a lot of countries in that murky middle that are not so thrilled to get on a press conference with Donald Trump right now and sing the president's praises, which is what Keir Starmer did. I mean, they did it for each other. It was mutually beneficial. But there are a lot of countries out there that are looking at a tariff much higher than the UK's, much higher than that baseline 10%, who will be thinking to themselves, it's not going to be that easy for us. And we're not, you know, perhaps not even in the mood to be as generous.
And so Labour has a sort of split position on this, because in some ways they have more wiggle room than the Tories would have done if they were in charge trying to agree this deal. I mean, if a Tory prime minister had announced it today, I think we'd be talking about the NHS being bought by American companies and so on. But at the same time, their base are not naturally comfortable with rapacious American capitalism. I mean, it's not necessarily, while it's a PR win, a media win, a centre ground win in many ways, I think this does sort of distance Starmer away from his, you know, the Corbynite base of the Labour Party, which is still there in many ways and still regards Donald Trump as an evil fascist that we should not be talking to.
Yeah, so and I think he's really focusing in on the aluminium and steel tariffs being removed. And that really speaks to his people and his core base. And of course, I think it was in a steel plant when he made his press conference. He was definitely with factory workers, and he wanted to bring home that, yes, this is for you. I fought for you in this trade deal. I think it's really interesting how they're going to spend $10 billion now with Boeing to build up their military, and we wait to hear what airplane they're going to buy. or airplanes.
Please not the F-35. That's a disaster. It's meant to be a disaster.
Okay. So it, you know, I mean, that could, that's, you know, that'll shore up American manufacturing. I don't know how much it'll shore up British manufacturing, but I find it very encouraging that they're thinking about this as national security as well, that this isn't just economic security, and that they're closer ties in this way. You know, and the UK is a huge exporter of Rolls-Royce engines and engine parts and all these little intricate pieces that they specialize in that America likes. So, of course, aluminium and steel works. But yeah, I mean, this it sounds a lot more free trade-ish for a Labour government than I think we expected.
And Kate, Sarah touched on China at the beginning there. Clearly, it seems that Liberation Day, I think as we get further away from Liberation Day, it seems obvious that the real focus of this in strategic terms, in security terms, and in trade terms, was China. And now we are in the phase where the Trump administration is trying to strike deals with allies, and it doesn't, it seems, yes, there are negotiations going on in Switzerland between China and America, but it doesn't see China as a natural ally, and it is trying to more aggressively decouple the Western global economy from China and its reach over the global economy. It's very high-stakes stuff, but if there is now a series of agreements that follow with the European Union, with India, with South Korea, with Japan, the Trump administration can start pointing towards their strategy and saying it makes sense.
Yes, and I agree with you, Freddie, that it has come to be seen that for this administration that the key issue here is and has always been China. And that goes back to his first term. You know, China has always been the country that he has been seen to target and to want to take power away from, particularly economic power. I suppose the difficulty here is that it has been done in such a slapdash and messy way. And as you say, it's so high stakes. It's made it a lot harder to figure out what is actually 4D chess and what is the Trump administration really messing up in its first 100 days. And I think it's a combination of both. Liberation Day was not a day that was purely about China, right? If your goal is to decouple from China and you recognize there's going to be a lot of pain, economic pain attached to that for your own citizens and for the rest of the world, then you need all the allies you can get and you need all the support you can get. And Liberation Day was, let me take every friend and foe and throw them out the window together. And so it strikes me that perhaps realizing and going back to that first term that China is always the country that he wanted to target, there has been some acknowledgement and frankly some compromise and concession on the part of the Trump administration that maybe we can't be so horrible to our friends and allies all the time. And I also think in addition to that, of course, it was the markets, right? So the combination of realizing, oh, America might be the most powerful country in the world, but it is made better by having friends with America. One of the reasons America is the most powerful country in the world is because it is so rich and so successful and so capitalist and markets are turning on us. That combination meant they almost had to come back to the China point. So I do think it all comes down to China, but how the Trump administration got back to that and almost got back on track from where he was in his first term was a really painful experience. And the repercussions, you know, we've barely felt them yet. They're still going to come. And if these 10% tariffs remain in place, they're going to keep coming. There are also major questions to be asked about what happens if Trump is successful. He secures all of these trade deals with India, with Japan, with the UK, with Europe, et cetera, et cetera. What happens to China if you know, an already very, very unstable economy in China, which was looking bad long before Trump arrived back in the Oval Office, gets worse? Is that going to make China more aggressive? I mean, there's a strong argument to say yes. There's a strong argument to say that China, you know, in order to keep their own citizens kind of calm and on track, might say, well, this is the time to target Taiwan. There's so many complicating factors. And that's why I think when Donald Trump, you know, really nails something, and today's a really good example of that, you can praise the free trade outcome, and you can say that this is the right track, but you still have to step back and ask, you know, what did it take to get here? Is it really the case that Donald Trump had to blow everything up to fix it again? Or perhaps have we just made the world a bit more unstable in this process? And there's still so many outstanding questions because the UK, albeit a very important economy and the U.S.'s top ally, is one country. And now we got to go through all the others.
That's a very good point. Sarah, what, you want to say something?
Well, I thought it was really interesting that the architect of World Tariff Day, Liberation Day, wasn't in the room, Peter Navarro. And so Peter Navarro, who, you know, went to jail for the president, so he's very loyal to Peter. And he's the one that came out with this idea of a big trade war, global trade war and tariffs. But he has really been sidelined. Now, Howard Lutnick was in the room. Word is that he's been a bit sidelined, but he clearly has taken a role in this trade negotiation. And it has been Scott Bessent that has taken more of the lead in trying more common sense trade policies and ideas to calm the markets. And he's the one who's going to negotiate with China directly. So, you know, we have seen some changes since April 2nd. But it'll be interesting to see if things become more like they were by the end of all this. You know, by the end, maybe we all just get back to where we actually began, because we can't function otherwise. But I do think Kate's point on China and how China reacts when it's boxed into a corner, and this actually works in boxing China out. How will they respond militarily? Right now, they have the bigger hand to play, especially in the Indo-Pacific.
Well, finally, both of you, I want to ask for a prediction from both of you as to where the Starmer-Trump relationship is going to go. I believe that history, what's the phrase, doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. And I think there is a similarity with the relationship between Theresa May and Donald Trump and the relationship between Keir Starmer and Donald Trump, because Trump is trying to be nice. He's saying he seems to, apparently he genuinely thinks this, but who knows with Trump, that he genuinely thinks Keir Starmer has a very attractive voice. He clearly gets on with Lord Mandelson, but we saw this with Theresa May. Trump would be very flattering, but it was also destined to be a disaster, because you had a Britain that was fundamentally much more interested in re-establishing good relations with Europe, free trade with Europe, freedom of movement with Europe, and so on, and not that interested in dealing with Donald Trump. So I think when Donald Trump comes in September, there is quite a strong possibility of a major blow-up, possibly an interview with a News International publication, where all of the good news that we're hearing now is spectacularly blown up. What do you think?
Well, I actually think it's going much better than Theresa May. I mean, Theresa May's government couldn't stand the Donald and did not further a trade agreement. So Starmer's already gotten further than she did. And I think they've learned the lessons from that government. I don't think it's going to be as chummy as Boris, but for obvious reasons, they're more ideologically alike and so forth, characters. But I think that they'll be okay. I think they're going to be okay up till September, maybe through the end of this year. But other international crises like Ukraine and Israel and possibly Iran could play bigger factors in the long-term relationship between them.
Mm. Kate?
Yeah, I also think Ukraine would be the issue to truly explode something. Keir Starmer and Theresa May had fundamentally different issues at hand. Theresa May had to deal with trade in Europe. She had to try to sort that, ultimately failed to do so. Keir Starmer has to figure out how he's going to get the economy growing by more than 1% in order to be competitive in the next election. And doing free trade deals and reducing tariff and non-tariff barriers with the United States is going to be part of what gets him there. So I think he's got real incentive to stay on Donald Trump's side. It is part of his focus. I also think that, you know, everybody used to get so shocked and upset when Donald Trump would say something offensive about another world leader. And, you know, for pretty good reason, like just like decency and like norms, but, you know, things that used to matter and I think still do. But fundamentally, like, it's just water off a duck's back now. Even in the press conference today, when he's saying things like, they were a bit closed, they were a closed country, but they're opening for us. Like, there was a time 7 or 8 years ago where people would have flipped out. How dare he? And now nobody cares. Nobody's paying attention to it. Keir Starmer doesn't get riled by it. Peter Mandelson's got a sense of humor. He's not getting riled by it. I just think The way that everybody's adapted to the way that Donald Trump talks, particularly about other countries and leaders, means that it's less likely that you're going to see some massive explosion based on things said. Were Donald Trump, say, to actually pull funding to Ukraine, that's a totally different story.
Well, it will be fascinating to watch. And I hope we can get you both on again soon to discuss it. Thank you very much, Sarah. Thank you very much, Kate. Thank you for listening to that episode of Americano. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please leave a review on whatever platform you are watching or listening to it on. We prefer positive reviews, although some constructive criticism is also welcome. I'd also urge you to sign up to the Americano newsletter, which I write every week. It comes out on Thursdays, and people seem to be enjoying it so far. Thank you very much to the audience. Thanks also to my producer, Natasha Feroz, for doing such a wonderful job. And speak to you next time.